things happen to people who listen to radio.
Once we understand the bug, we will defeat it.
Are you ready for
radio? The only good bug is a dead bug.
Shoot a nuke down a bug hole, you got a lot of dead bugs, all right?
Some say that a live and let live policy is preferable to war with the bugs.
I say kill them all.
Yeah!
Put it on and leave it on.
Welcome to Bug Radio, boys and girls. We're in a bit of a pickle. As you probably know, on Bug Radio, we're anti-bug. We won't accommodate it, and we won't negotiate with it. So you can imagine our surprise when the PM decided to surrender to the bug to save a bluebell-sniffing pillock in a beanie hat. We're going to be complaining about that a lot. We're talking rats, face recognition, and to keep our spirits up, we've got a rare bit of good news to share too. We're all up on Threads Radio, that's threadsradio.com, and you can follow us on @BugRadio2020 on Twitter and Instagram. Give us a click. To address the mayhem, as always, I'm joined by the Prince of Palmer's Green, Mr. Kieran Monks-Kaufman. I mean, wow.
Circumstances have become a little looser lately. It's become possible to play tennis and to see people outdoors. But as we're going to discuss, there are no rules anymore. The lockdown period is over. And if you were following it at any point, you're a mug.
Yeah, and just as a point of order, we're recording on Wednesday and things are moving pretty fast. So Cummings could quite possibly have walked by the time you hear this. But, you know, either way, we're going to give him both barrels.
Radio. Why did you not stay in your primary residence, Mr. Cummings, as the government guidelines state? Why did you go 260 miles across the country?
I behaved reasonably illegally.
It's just so wrong, isn't it? What are you doing?
They're telling you to do one thing and they're doing the wrong thing.
I had a granddaughter born during lockdown. I was supposed to be there when she was born. I haven't even held her.
So Cummings, this name that's now become very familiar to a lot of people that have been following the news, has, we understand, committed egregious misdeeds that people have been subsequently arguing about since they were revealed. And the essential charge here is that having become ill with the bug, and quite possibly his wife also with the bug, then travelled the length of the entire country from his palatial lodgings in London to even less relatably palatial lodgings on his father's Durham estate pile, which apparently had so many homes in it that you didn't need to see anyone there. He remained in Durham for the prescribed period of a quarantine, which is 14 days.
Yeah.
But during this time, even more scandalously, has been cited by retirees enjoying the bluebells at Barnard Castle, which it turns out is not just a castle, but in actual fact, a town.
Yeah.
And then outrageously, why did he say he was in Barnard Castle?
Because he wanted to test whether his eyes worked. So he got into a car with his wife and kid in the back and tanked it all the way to Barnard Castle.
And I mean, given that Cummings already has a reputation as a bit of a know-it-all, people have pointed out that this represents a hitherto unknown mastery of optometry as well, because this has never been on any sort of standard test.
And actually might be a crime as well.
So to summarise briefly, travelling with the bug the entire breadth of the country, overnighting in another home, which we've already seen the Scottish chief medical officer get fired for,
yeah,
leaving the house for a non-local area for a non-essential activity in this form of bluebell sniffing in Barnard Castle to the righteous fury of local retirees. And then to compound this litany of shame is well, I mean, the positive case for this last point is driving while blind. That's not the accusation. That's the defence.
Yeah, the key point really with this, if his wife was ill, then the journey was against the rules because he's taking the bug up north. And if she wasn't ill, then there was no reason for the journey in the first place because they could have looked after their son themselves. So it's a kind of circular defense.
I mean, I like to think we know a bit about bullshit on Bug Radio.
That's right.
And there's no shortage here, is there? I mean, there's so many discrepancies and rubbish excuses and incoherent explanations enough to fill several episodes of Bug Radio. So the government has been embarrassing itself in desperate attempts to defend this loose cannon SPAD and driving a
Land Rover Discovery through the
regulations.
Yeah.
So for instance, Michael Gove said that Cummings took this trip across the country to limit the spread of the bug.
Dominic gave an account of his actions and the steps that he took in order to make sure not just that his family was safe, but also that there was no risk of infecting other people.
This flies in the face of any understanding, really. I mean, he claims that this four-hour journey was done with no stops at all.
Yeah.
And that his child pissed in the woods by Barnard Castle in a proper, you know, responsible way, presumably with close supervision, cameras, an alarm system that works.
Mm.
But what about the police who came to visit the country pile? What about other family members? Was it all done with walkie-talkies and dead drops? You know, just by being there with the bug, he could have spread it onto any sort of inanimate object. I mean,
any surface. Yeah.
Did he touch any surfaces? Cummings must answer.
Today, I've had extensive face-to-face conversations with Dominic Cummings, and I've concluded that in travelling to find the right kind of childcare, I think he followed the instincts of every father, and I do not mark him down for that.
I'm a bit puzzled. You say he was following instincts. The rest of the country was following rules, not instincts. Are we now all entitled to follow instincts?
Boris's defence was that he followed the instinct of every father, which is a ballsy line, considering the Prime Minister won't even admit how many kids he's got.
He's obviously, you know, got strong fathering instincts towards just excessive fathering and subsequently taking no responsibility for it. But yeah, they have stuck doggedly to this line that no rules were broken, and they have tried sort of shaming the accusers. So a lot of the top guys in the shadow cabinet, people like Handjob and Sunak and all these lads, they were coming with these prepared statements that it was shameful to politicize a father's love for his child. And was it even like one of the medical stooges who said that, you know, this was just the sort of thing that a proper dad would have to do? And so obviously, by implication, the rest of us just don't give half a fuck about our families. You know, and presumably so many of us have been in these heartbreaking scenarios where somebody is ill or somebody is going through some trauma and nobody can see each other. And so this was obviously very offensive. So, you know, it's fair to say that that line didn't hold up. But did they stick to it? I mean, it feels like it's evolved a lot.
I don't know. I mean, well, where it is at the moment, this Tory MP, I think one of the new Conservative MPs, Miriam Cates, claims that Cummings left home to escape the baying mob outside his house, neglecting to mention that the baying mob was only outside his house because he left home. I mean, the top brass at Ingsoc would wince at that one.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely correct. I mean, I think that, again, highlights the very limited regard for the public's intelligence that the government is showing. You know, the fact that they can say that the crowd of cameramen trying to take pictures of Cummings as a result of his trip to Durham were the reason that he went to Durham. You know, are these people themselves not that bright, or are they just assuming that they're dealing with, you know, the most sort of swamp-dwelling Neanderthal intellects? I mean, how do they perceive us?
I mean, these ministers who are at gunpoint are one thing, but if you're publicly defending Cummings, like, off your own book right now, that's a pretty good indication of how seriously you've taken the lockdown so far, isn't it?
Well, I suppose, yeah, this is activating people's own consciences, I suppose, that probably, yeah, the people who have most strictly observed the lockdown will be the ones who are most fucked up.
Yeah.
What did the government know? The Prime Minister's spokesman repeatedly assured us that Cummings was, quote, at home during the time when he was away. And we now know that by home, they meant the East Wing of Daddy Cummings's.
Well, not only that, but Dominic Cummings and his wife managed to persuade Fraser Nelson, the editor of The Spectator, to publish two lockdown diary articles in which they claimed that their whole lockdown experience took place in London, rather than, as has now been established, more or less everywhere else.
It's a bit slippery than that. I was just reading that article. It more lies by omission that it makes no mention of any journey. It talks in great detail about every phase of the disease and their experience of it. And it also contradicts Cummings's account that his wife, Mary Wakefield, did not have the bug before going to Durham? Because in her article, she says that she had it before him. And he himself publicly confirmed that he had the bug on his first day in Durham. So the own goals are piling up. You know, the government goalkeeper, which is normally most of the lobby hacks, is shipping heavy water here to mix metaphors. You know, there's a bigger fish around the corner. But what did they know? I mean, presumably, we are to understand that the Prime Minister was very sick, and a lot of people suggest that perhaps Cummings was a really important decision maker, which we're going to discuss. But surely, you know, senior people in the government would know that their sort of top man had pissed off for a couple of weeks to sniff some bluebells.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty unlikely that they didn't.
And why no childcare in London? This is one of the top men in the government. You know, we're always being told that the hospitals in London, there's a huge medical operation that's been mobilised for people with coronavirus. And much of this is sitting idle. So how in blue blazes is it possible that the only acceptable childcare, unless this guy just has the most specific standards, there must be one guy in Durham who can charm the horseshoes off a Arabian mare. You know, how do these people perceive us? Are we just like a sort of slouching ball of meat? Are we a procession of beetles? I mean, how do you think this government thinks about you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I feel right now in the same way as I felt when they turned the Conservative Party Twitter account into a fact-check account during the election. I mean, they got away with that. So presumably they think they can get away with more or less anything to just front it out.
Yeah. And I mean, it remains to be seen the extent to which this miscalculation and own goal after own goal will ultimately cost them.
So why is this guy so important that these people have debased themselves trying to defend him?
His political career started more than 20 years ago, with former Prime Minister David Cameron describing him as a career psychopath.
It seems like while Johnson's been sick, that he has kind of been the de facto Prime Minister, the key decision maker who sends out the assemblage of drones, your Raabs, your Hancocks, to distribute the daily nonsense.
I think the implication is that it's not just while Boris Johnson is sick, because when he's not sick, he's on holiday, isn't he?
I think it was in spring when he fired his Home Secretary, Sajid Javid.
That wasn't the Home Secretary, that was the Chancellor. That's why we've got Rishi Sunak.
Yeah, and long may he continue to make it rain.
That's right.
But yeah, when it came down to his previous Chancellor, Sajid Javid, and apparently Cummings, I believe it was, firing somebody in his department.
Yeah, he had one of Sajid Javid's aides, a female aide, frog marched out of Portcullis House at gunpoint.
So it's
literally,
you know, the hierarchy begins to emerge that if Johnson very snappily decided to get rid of his Chancellor rather than Cummings at that time, you know, there's not a lot of ambiguity left for exactly where he stands in the scheme of things. And so how has he reached this position? I think it was mainly through, I suppose, Brexit and the election.
Well, he'd worked for Michael Gove at the Department of Education. Ostensibly, he's like a kind of mercurial advertising copywriter who wrote the famous take back control and get Brexit done slogans. Initially, I was kind of wondering whether people like us should be careful what we wish for, because he is apparently an enemy of the economic libertarians in the Conservative Party. But according to this piece by Stefan Collini in The Observer, insofar as there is a consistent politics here, it looks like Hayek. Cummings scorns traditional political labels, but his admiration for single-minded entrepreneurs, like, for example, Elon Musk, his obsession with the role of off-the-scale IQ, and his belief in self-regulating economic systems scarcely make him a promising recruit for the left. So, stick the boot in, basically.
Like, words like Svengali and guru and talisman, I mean, he's got these sort of layers of Eastern mysticism around him. They tried to do this with Steve Hilton, didn't they, remember? Like, because he didn't wear proper shoes and he wouldn't wear a shirt, and they sort of made him into a genius. And then he turned out to be this, like, absolute bozo who was just
the Fox News grifter, basically.
Yeah, just last seen on Fox News, just, like, saying literally anything for a buck and, like, not having any beliefs. So there is this tendency for our lobby to deify these advisors, these spads, like, way above what they deserve. However, the fact that he did devise these two slogans that have, to a large extent, defined our politics, or at least up until the bug, this take back control and then get Brexit done. And that really did the trick on us, didn't it? So, you know, maybe we deserve to be treated like morons?
Yeah, I think there's something in that, yeah.
What are they supposed to think when these two three-word slogans just comprehensively triumph? I mean, what are they supposed to think of us?
Yeah, I guess it's not really surprising why, right now, they thought they could just say, he's a great father, and everyone would just go, oh, right, yeah, no, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying that as a polity, we haven't done a lot to...
We haven't covered ourselves in glory.
We haven't done a lot to convince our rulers that they really need to sort of exert themselves in ruling over us, that we will swallow more or less any old shit.
Hmm.
And they're sort of testing that theory possibly to destruction, but...
He's quite a mysterious figure. Like, most people have never heard him speak before. And so when he had his own presser in the Downing Street Rose Garden... I thought it might kind of humanize him because he was so mysterious beforehand. He was just this kind of generic bogeyman who you could just project your darkest fantasies onto. And then the first time people actually hear his voice, he became a human. And I thought maybe that might tug at people's heartstrings slightly. But I mean, as we'll see, things didn't really pan out like that.
My mum's terrified. My dad's had 3 shoulder operations. Stan Law have left him without his shoulder. And she won't even let him walk in the garden, won't let him go to the park, won't let him sit on the bench. She won't even entertain me in her garden with a tent.
Would you recommend Fernard Castle for a day out?
The scale of opprobrium has been quite spectacular. To start with the most extreme examples, there have been effigies hung off bridges.
That's right.
I mean, there's been incredible cut through to this story. You know, people, I feel, had wanted a hate figure. There is this latent bloodlust, that all this sort of pent-up energy that people have, and we need a blood sacrifice.
So I'm just looking at this here. So according to YouGov, 59% of the public now think he should go. That's up 7%. The only way Downing Street could have spun this as a success is if that had gone down significantly, but it's gone up.
Well, a lot of Tories are trying to eat their own man. Like, is there a word for it? Like, Toricide? You know, some of the most shameless patriots, like Julia Heartless Sewer, are saying Cummings must go. A lot of the ERG crew are saying Cummings must go. Jeremy Hunt, who is, like, very much a weather vane rather than a signpost, is, like... on both sides of the fence, but saying that he definitely broke the rules. I think it's several dozen MPs now want him to go. It's like Tony Blair. It cuts across every demographic. You know, leavers, remainers, young, old, people who like cashew nuts, people who like hazelnuts. Like, literally every demographic agrees. There's emphatic data.
87% of Brits have heard a great deal or fair amount about the Cummings story. 80% think he broke lockdown, 9% do not. 76% say he's wrong not to apologise. 66% say he's not telling the truth. 17% think he is. And also 66% think he should resign. 17% think he shouldn't. That's from JL Partners.
Well, that sounds right to me. Everyone I've spoken to thinks he should resign. You could see the vibes were getting nasty in Islington, where his place is.
Mm.
That group led by donkeys.
Yeah, they're such morons. But anyway, let's not get bogged down in that, but yeah. There's a lot of conspiracy theories going around about why Dominic Cummings wasn't trending on Twitter. It turns out it was anti-porn filters that stopped Dominic Cummings from trending on Twitter, according to The Guardian. Did you read this?
I have not, but it's a terrible shame.
As a result of the filtering, trending topics over the past 5 days have instead included a variety of misspellings of his name, including Cummings, Dominic Cummings, and Sack Cummings, as well as his first name on its own, the hashtag SackDom, and the place names Durham, County Durham, and Barnard Castle. He might even have changed his name by deed poll so that he could never trend on Twitter. That'd be interesting.
Oh, yeah, and I suppose as a master of planning, it would be remiss of us to skip maybe the most embarrassing aspect of this episode so far, because he was previously on the hook. A Sunday Times article had suggested that he was one of the main people pushing for herd immunity and being quite callous about the possibility of...
But hang on, I thought that Sunday Times article said that he was the one, once he saw the Neil Ferguson modelling, he was the one who was arguing for the lockdown and won that argument against the Prime Minister, to his credit, which might have saved some lives, just as a point of order.
Well, not really, because he was the main guy pushing for herd immunity, according to that article, in the first place. And if he was then horrified by what most people had already realised, that's like people getting credit for quitting smoking more than the people that never smoked in the first place.
Mm.
And I mean, I'm only mentioning that because he clearly feels some pressure over that, because he was keen to say in his Rose Garden appearance that he'd always taken the threat of the virus very seriously, and that on his blog he'd written about the threat of coronaviruses. However, he has come unstuck, yet another spectacular own goal.
Mm.
How many now? 12, 13? It's been established that he had made those edits to the blog in the last month. So, I mean, that is just shameless, isn't it? I mean, what can you tell a guy like that? I think we should play a sad bassoon noise at that point. So the public are furious. You know, they hate this guy. He's become like, you know, the top figure of hate since like, when's the last time we had a figure of hate this good?
Maybe Ian Huntley.
I mean, I remember in America, they had this guy that was selling hand lotion. He bought all the hand lotion and he was selling it for outrageous markups. And the story was the New York Times' most popular story of the pandemic so far, which shows how people really want a villain. Shkreli, he was a classic hate figure. Also the guy who killed Cecil the Lion. But anyway, so he's a total hate figure. And then worse than that, he makes it impossible for anyone to take the rules seriously.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's most disturbing about the way that these people are fronting it out is that they don't seem to really understand what the central problem is, which is that such high-profile, unpunished flouting of the lockdown makes it nigh on impossible for the government to enforce what are going to be increasingly complicated lockdown arrangements into the future. And West Midlands police are now complaining of multiple individuals querying or refusing to comply with instructions as a direct result of Mr. Cummings' activities.
I mean, you got to laugh, haven't you? Because the police, presumably, they're going up to groups of shirtless lobster people just reveling.
I'm just testing my eyesight. What do you want?
Yeah, and they're all just like, Cummings, you know, he's their, like, get-out-of-jail-free card. He's the hall pass. He's just legitimized everything.
Yeah.
So he's got a very peculiar position in that he's simultaneously a hate figure, and also he has basically given everybody a license to grill.
A carte blanche.
Yeah, like he said, go on, enjoy yourselves. You know, what bug? It's like declaring victory in World War II in 1943, but he's saying, you know, get on with it. So yeah, it's totally unenforceable. And every time the government tries to come with some, you know, we're all in this together and we've all got to follow these rules, everyone is just ruffling.
Anytime they say you must, there's like a sort of in brackets, unless you're mates with the PM.
Right. Any piece of advice at this point just leads to incredulous giggling and this cocktail of emotions that can only end on Hampstead Heath with a six pack.
That's right.
I think we were pretty good, right, for most of this?
Yeah.
But the people who absolutely 100% entirely followed every dot and comma, they are government branded morons.
The other thing is, I mean, if Cummings does walk or gets fired, which is, we've got to say, there's a possibility, Boris Johnson would have to actually be the Prime Minister. And as far as I can see, that's not what he signed up for. Like, he signed up for the fun bit, you know, like late nights of endless work and poring over DTI reports until 5 o'clock in the morning. That's not really his style. He'd rather have a kind of like psychopathic tea cozy wearing Dr. Strangelove who's across the details so that he can just like wave at people and go to parties. And also he's going to have to do Brexit, you know, and all of this like stuff about rules of origin and, you know, he's not up to it. So he literally just has to stand there and just eat buckets full of shit over and over and over again and just hope that this goes away. Like, it's just a Hail Mary for him.
It is. I mean, you got me thinking there, what is Johnson in government for? And I was thinking of things that he would enjoy. Like, he'd probably like meeting celebrities and like, you know, opening carbuncles, like those sort of airlifts that go over, where is it? Like those sort of sky pods that go across the river.
Oh yeah. The sky, I can't remember what the fuck it's
exactly
called.
Exactly. Like no one uses it.
It's designed to take the tiny number of wealthy bankers who live in that particular part of the Docklands so that they can go and see Bryan Adams at the O2, basically. That's what it's for.
Yeah, so that's the sort of thing he likes, you know, just sort of having glamorous engagements and like opening nonsense carbuncles.
Yeah.
So he's in way over his head and he's got to have this guy who hates us all running the country because otherwise he'd have to do it.
Yeah. It's clear the length he's prepared to go to avoid having to do any actual work.
Yeah, any single or collective member of his government would go before Cummings. Any level of public health disaster is acceptable before losing Cummings. You know, would he accept having parts of his body chopped off to preserve Cummings?
Well, it depends which part. I mean, I'd imagine part of the reason why he wants to be the PM is because it might present him with some interesting mating opportunities.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I thought Rosina Allen Khan had potentially a good line because it's difficult to pierce the hide of bullshit because obviously the Tories are kind of coming with the Donald Trump approach right now. Hmm. It was famously put as flood the zone with shit. You know, just like confuse everybody, just put up smoke screens, talk nonsense.
The carpet bombing strategy of bullshit, basically.
Yeah, just talk about weird things, just confuse everyone.
Yeah.
But I thought one thing that potentially might work was Rosina Allen Khan. And incidentally, I think she's a rising star who can go far.
Yeah. Doctor as well, nice timing.
She talked about how Johnson's just protecting his boss, and people need to hammer that line, I think, because it worked with Trump. When people wanted to get rid of Bannon, they said he was Trump's boss and Trump's vanity couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
So if people keep asking Johnson, you know, has he checked this with his boss, and, you know, has he cleared this with his boss and all this sort of thing, you know, maybe that might...
But I know, I don't think it's going to work, because Boris Johnson is not a deeply ignorant man, to be fair to him. He's reasonably clever and quite well-educated. He's capable of some sort of causal thought where he thinks, if this guy goes, I mean, obviously I don't like the fact that everybody knows that I'm basically just a fuckabout, but if it means I don't have to do any work, fine. If it's a choice between feeling slightly emasculated or having to actually do some work, he's going to go for the first one every time, I think.
Yeah, he's going to take the L on this one, and the L is going to include the public health strategy. I mean, it's notable that the government is belatedly trying to roll out a test and trace program of the kind that was very effective in like South Korea and Singapore. Is Singapore a country, or what's its status?
Is it kind of like a principality? I'm not sure. I'll have to check that.
So who owns Singapore?
I don't know, various bankers.
Impossible, yeah. So they had very effective track and trace approaches, and we're belatedly getting on board with that. But this is going to involve localized lockdowns, as Matt Hancock says. So it's going to require large numbers of people, because apparently we have quite a crude method. We're not micro-targeted like some other countries have been. It's going to require lots of people that don't have any symptoms to voluntarily lock themselves down. And I'm not sure they're going to.
And also, I mean, anyone who is on a local lockdown is presumably going to have to endure footage on the television of Cummings visibly not on a lockdown elsewhere and get angry about it.
What's our policy on Bug Radio? If we get locked down, are we still, you know, going for a jar by the Thames?
If we get locked down, will we get up again?
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, I think the answer is yes. You know, and that's not on us. Although I don't say that the public doesn't have any responsibilities now. I mean, I think our weaknesses have been exposed by the low level of bullshit the government feels is the only thing necessary to keep us in line. So I think we've got to up our game. And part of that is obviously still to have some social responsibility. You know, don't have, you know, 70-person orgies, and don't go to that wrestling tournament quite yet.
Don't be a dick, basically.
Yeah, so that's still our policy. For a lot of our listeners who are of the progressive bent, does the need for a functional government during a time of crisis outweigh the pleasure of seeing the Tories go up in flames?
I was thinking about this. The trouble is that they've had amazing amounts of goodwill up to now. You know, from the beginning of the pandemic, their polling was great. And they still fucked it up. So you almost just think, does it really make a great deal of difference either way? I mean, I guess you counter by saying that if they do go tits up, then, you know, it could get a hell of a lot worse. You could say that. But it's not as if us being nice to them and not constantly attacking them is making them do a good job, is it?
Like, do we need a government that can be taken seriously in its public health messaging? Like, and a lot of the scientists stooges have disgraced themselves as well, because they're supposed to be the responsible ones. And to be fair, I think a lot of the SAGE committee have come out and said, you know, this is a farce. This is totally undermines everything.
We can't defend this anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I think we do need some sort of authoritative health messaging.
Well, there's a very quick way they could bring that about, isn't there? Just get rid of Dominic Cummings.
Well, I think it's gone beyond that now, hasn't it? Because, as we've discussed, his fate is so intertwined with the Prime Minister's. It's going to be very difficult for the government to have any credibility from now on. And while on a personal level, it's good to see some of these appalling human beings suffer and squirm, we haven't defeated the bug, have we?
Only about 10% of us have had the cooties.
The bug has beat a strategic retreat. Did you see that Onion article that was like, Al-Qaeda's grand plan is to let America destroy itself? You know, like, the bug has given us a moment to fuck up, and to fuck up profoundly. And then it's going to come back in winter. Hi, guys. And nobody's going to have a clue. And any sort of messaging will be just totally compromised. So, weirdly, in this situation, I want better Tories. You know, I want more effective Tories. I think normally it's better if you've got a malicious government for it to not be that competent. The worst kind of government would be a government that was both malicious and competent. It would be better to have a malicious, incompetent government in most circumstances. Yeah. But now, the circumstance calls for competent Tories, really.
Now, more than ever, we need...
Radio.
Commence blathering.
There's been a whole hoo-ha about how bad the messaging's been.
We think it's important to stay sane.
Radio. Baby, let's go! When the fuck is this going to end?
Just trying to find something properly weird.
We need to find whatever it takes to get through this rotten fucking plague. You ready? Radio.
Speaking of cannibalistic creatures, a new problem is emerging from the bug era, a sort of unforeseen Jurassic Park scenario that we don't quite know how to feel about. During the lockdown, a lot of our cultural life has suffered. A lot of the restaurant business, you know, I want to give respect to listeners I know that work in restaurants. You know, I hope that those circumstances improve quickly and we can all be together in your restaurants. But the absence of restaurants has really hit the rodent population, we are led to understand. And again, no shade on those people in restaurants, but they leave a lot of trash lying around, which feeds the rats. And in most sort of big urban centres, I remember going to Marseille once and the rats basically ran the place. And I mean, I think in New York, Paris, London, the rats do extremely well, but now they're not. So according to this guy, and I've spoken to him, Bobby Corrigan, an urban rodentologist, he says, rats that were living by a restaurant someplace nearby and perhaps for decades having generations of rats dependent on that restaurant food, well, life is no longer working for them and they only have a couple of choices. And those choices are grim. They include cannibalism, rat battles, not rat battles in the Eminem sense. I'm talking rat battles.
To the death.
Yeah, in infanticide. So, I mean, that's the situation with the rat population.
I've got here urban rodentologist Bobby Corrigan told the Washington Post that a pest expert sent him a photo after a gruesome rat battle in Queens. A hungry nest of rats had turned on each other, Corrigan believes. A pile of rat limbs on the sidewalk was all that remained. I mean, he sounds a bit like a Clicks guy.
No, he's not. I've spoken to him. He's genuinely the rat guru. Like, any time there's a significant rat story, and I've written a couple of articles about, like, rat issues in various places, Bobby Corrigan knows more about rats than anyone else in the world. I think he is the foremost rat bloke.
All right, well, I smell a rat.
I hadn't even read that bit about the limbs on the sidewalk. So, you know, how do we feel about this?
Because I mean, if you're telling me that, I want to see some video. But I mean, look, you know, I'm just a cynic, you know.
But I think it stands to reason that, I mean, there's no Sunak largesse for rats, is there?
No.
So, you know, they've got to look after themselves.
But then, hang on, is there hardly any food waste around? I mean, supermarkets are still going normally. People's bins are still full of shit. And, you know, there's quite a lot of restaurants that are still operating through delivery and takeout. So is there really, you know, there seems to be, there's plenty of shit around, isn't there?
So what, you're saying if you were a rat, you wouldn't be complaining?
If I was a rat, I'd get myself paid.
I don't know. I mean, it's an alarming story. I mean, I trust Bobby Corrigan. I think he knows about rats. But assuming this is correct, is that something we've got to worry about, that rats are getting sort of fiercer and, you know, more ruthless?
Well, I don't know whether a rat will start on a human being, but I mean,
if they get desperate.
Is there some sort of reciprocal symbiotic relationship between rats and humans? I mean, we know what they get from us. Do we get anything from them?
The plague.
Well, they weren't responsible for this particular plague. We should point that out.
No, but like some really bad ones in the past.
Yeah.
And presumably, if there was a kind of code among rats that they wouldn't eat each other's children, and now they've gone beyond that, they've broken that code, you know, what's next?
Well, I mean, only time will tell.
Is now the time for trying to appeal to their better natures, to try and feed them better so they don't come for us? Radio, the best station. Apparently, facial recognition has taken a hit during the plague era because a lot of people are wearing masks, and some of the companies behind it want to reassure their stockholders and regain some relevance. So they're pushing this idea of immunity passports, which I think have been doing the rounds for a while. I think from early on, we saw a lot of suggestions that people who had already had the bug would have more freedom. So for instance, you know, you had the vision of nightclubs where you've got to show your immunity passport. So this facial recognition startup, Face First, Californian crew with 10 $10 million funding, promising to set up a coronavirus immunity registry, which will involve people getting smartphone apps that will display their immunity status. Something like your iPhone reading your face. And so we anticipated, didn't we? We saw this coming. And especially as face recognition companies have been hit by the masks thing, it makes sense.
Yeah. So basically, if you've got the cooties or if you haven't had the cooties, you can't be in our gang. Can you see a sort of cliquey atmosphere starting to take hold?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the early days, we envisaged that there would be these post-bug parties where the, you know, the beautiful people that have had the bug, that have, you know, been touched by Jesus, that have allowed it to speak through them, you know, could then suddenly go and mingle with their similarly impure brethren.
Yeah.
Whilst the poor suckers who never knew the touch of bug would be left to congregate in underground railway stations around bins lit on fire.
Well, first of all, I mean, there's an obvious scientific issue. We still don't know really anything about COVID-19. So we don't know that having antibodies actually prevents you getting the disease a second time, or how long the protective qualities of those antibodies last. I mean, most colds are coronaviruses, aren't they? And they're always about...
Yeah, but I think there'd be more...
There'd be more anecdotal accounts of people getting unbelievably ill with it and then getting unbelievably ill with it again.
Yeah, I think given that there's been flaws in test kits in a lot of places, there hasn't been an alarming number of reports about people getting the bug twice.
Mm.
And those reports are plausibly explained either by false results.
False positives.
Yeah. So, I mean, I suppose it's more of an ethical quandary, isn't it? Do we want to create like these sort of mechanisms for exclusion? I mean, it's probably just going to be another form of discrimination, isn't it? That's going to impact people that are often targeted by discrimination.
Essentially, but then if you've got a whole load of people who you know are immune, they could maybe be drafted into key worker positions to try to help get the economy going again safely.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Like if there's a sort of Chernobyl situation where you need somebody to go into a high bug area, you send the guy with the antibodies. If you had some trust in our decision makers, you know, there is some promise to that idea. But otherwise, you could see it just creating that sort of H.G. Wells environment where you've got the, well, in the time machine, you know, the Eloi, the people who live above ground, the beautiful people, and then below ground, the Morlocks, who don't have that immunity passport and are excluded from many areas of society. So obviously there's a lot wrong with the world and the bug remains a real problem. So let's not be in any doubt about that. But there was a little ray of light in the last week or so in that much loved children's author and friend of our various families and extended circles, Michael Rosen, emerged from a lengthy battle with the bug that we are led to believe was an extended spell in ICU when, you know, all sorts of things could have happened. And this was a very worrying and alarming time for anybody who cares about Mike, which is an awful lot of people. I mean, if you saw his poor wife, Emma, was deluged with people demanding constant updates. So we're absolutely thrilled that given this bastard plague has already extracted such a terrible cost, that fingers crossed at this point, our pal Mike Rosen appears to have, and we don't want to be too premature about this, but you know, it was great to hear that he was out of ICU.
Yeah, and he's, I mean, he's in pretty good shape, isn't he? So that is going to count for him.
Michael Rosen is one of our favourite people. Terrific poems. I think everybody read that NHS poem, These Are the Hands. You know, really powerful stuff, you know, affirming the value of our public healthcare system. And I've grown up with his stuff like Spider Bought a Bicycle and the Bakerloo Flea, the Chocolate Cake, the Bear Hunt. I mean, there's so many people who grew up with this stuff. Although we wouldn't want to go down a rabbit hole, he's got very good politics as well, and has consistently been on the right side of most things that matter.
That's right.
So here at Bug Radio, we were thrilled to hear about that and to relay it to you. And if you're not familiar with his work, get onto The Bakerloo Flea, The Spider Bought a Bicycle, and various poems that we might be hyping from our social media accounts.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to call us pricks, you can do that on Twitter at BugRadio2020. And if 250 characters isn't sufficient for you to express your contempt, you can email us on BugRadio2020@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. Now wash your hands and piss off.